Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We'd like to better understand who is listening and how you are using podcasts. Please help us out. Complete a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcast survey. One word, podcast survey. It takes less than 10 minutes. It will really help to support the show. Again, npr.org/podcast survey. Dairy Girls might remind you of a lot of warm and funny shows about high school. It has the group of loyal friends, the adventures and humiliations, and the slow progress toward adulthood. But these kids are taking on these challenges in Northern Ireland in the 1990s.
It's a time when an ordinary day can be interrupted by everything from an encounter with soldiers to breaking news of violence. Still, high school rolls on, and high school students do too. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about Dairy Girls on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/happyhour to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson, also with us from his home studio, is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
Well, we are bringing you another episode that comes from our listener poll. The first one we did from this was Schitt's Creek a couple weeks ago, but now we are doing Dairy Girls. It has 12 episodes total, 2 6-episode seasons that you can find on Netflix. We are going to talk about it a little bit, and then we're going to answer some questions that you guys sent to us by voice message. Thank you. So before we get started, if you're not familiar at all with this show, it takes place in Derry in Northern Ireland in the 1990s. It is created by Lisa McGee. She is a playwright and screenwriter who is from Northern Ireland. It's somewhat autobiographical. She wrote all the episodes. Glenn, how did you enjoy Dairy Girls?
Well, you know, this isn't my first attempt at this show. We watched the first episode when this first dropped. I think it was last year on Netflix. And we came away thinking, well, that was kind of bleak and depressing and just mean. It is fascinating to me that Schitt's Creek came in number one in our listener poll, and this came in number two, because these shows could not be, in my mind, more different. Schitt's Creek, warm, comforting, friendly. Dairy Girls humor is pitched so much higher. It is vibrating at a much more frenetic frequency. It took a while to get used to the acting styles, too, because these girls are going big. They are pushing it. There are some literal mugging going on here. And some of the scenes play more like sketches than scenes. Particularly Saoirse Monica Jackson as Erin and Nicola Coughlan as Claire are pulling faces. So I sat there thinking, is what I'm sensing that the show is trying too hard? Is what I'm sensing an actual real disdain for these characters? And then I realized that those were questions I had about Pen 15 last year, which is a show I think that's vibrating on the show's wavelength. And I think when I stepped back, I realized, okay, both of these shows are semi-autobiographical, right? And these are adults looking back at their own lives and lampooning the self that they were back then. So I gave a little bit of slack for that. I think this show takes entirely too long to realize what a comedy goldmine they're sitting on in Siobhan McSweeney as Sister Michael. She is so important to this show's tone, and I don't mean this negatively. She is the lodestone. She pulls the show back when it's getting too frenetic. She is just a comedy gold. I dug it, but it took me a while.
This is interesting because I have to tell you, Glenn, you're sitting there saying, like, they go kind of broad. It's almost like mugging. It's so different from Schitt's Creek. I have to tell you, to me, there's a roughly equivalent amount of mugging in these two shows. I mean, you may like one kind of mugging more than the other, but I don't know if I would say the acting in Schitt's Creek is small.
Are we talking about Catherine O'Hara? She's big. Everybody else is playing it a little bit more low-key, I would argue.
I don't know. Stephen, what do you think?
I'm a little bit more on Team Linda in that regard. I enjoyed this show. This show kind of hit me in a little bit of a freaks and geeks place that I could really get into. As such, the joke density is a little bit light, and I do think This show tries to pack a lot of characters and a lot of scenes into just, you know, two seasons. It's just 12, 25-minute episodes. So first of all, you can book through this entire series so far in about 5 hours. And you're also trying to fit in the dynamics of several families, 5 core friends, a bunch of ancillary friends, life at this school, life in Northern Ireland during the Troubles in the 90s. There's a lot going on in this show, and you don't always get a chance to just kind of hang back and breathe with it. I found, in general, the core stories of these 5 central friends, these 5 high schoolers, and their lives at school with that wonderful headmistress, that worked for me more than the kind of story of their extended adult families, where those scenes, to me, felt a little meaner and a little bit more formless. I really liked hanging out with Aaron and Claire and Michelle and Orla and James, these kind of goofy teenagers who I was able to relate to a little bit more.
Yeah, so it's funny. I liked this show, I think, more than either one of you guys did. And I have a couple of guesses why that might be. But I, too, like Glenn, had started this show a while ago, and I didn't hook into it right away. But when I went back to it and I kind of gave it a little bit more time, I felt like, oh, okay, now I sort of understand more and have a higher regard for how odd these girls are in a way that I really, really enjoyed. I think Erin as a central character, you kind of think when you first see her, she's like a very pretty blonde. She's the kind of girl that when you see her, you think, oh, I know how she's going to fit into this high school story because you've seen a lot of other high school stories. But I think she turns out to be such an odd duck in such a great way that I very much appreciated. I think maybe part of it is that for me, there just aren't that many shows that have been able to give voice to a bunch of oddball girls. I also think some of the tone that you're talking about comes from the setting, right? It comes from the fact that the contrast they're trying to draw is between this really funny, heartwarming story of girls growing up versus the place that they're in is so, this is not a pun, so troubled. There's so much going on. What happened to me with this show was I watched the first season and I was watching it and I was like, this is fine. This is fine and endearing and I like it. And then I got to the 6th episode of the first season and it just emotionally just walloped me at the very end, which is intentional. It's a wallop kind of moment. And it worked completely. And the exact same thing happened in the 2nd season. I watched those 6 episodes. I got to the end of the 6th one, and I was crying by the end. And in both cases, I felt like they didn't spend the entire episode building up to trying to make you cry. It just sort of came out of having watched all these girls together.
Yeah.
I really like it. I like it a lot.
One thing that really stood out to me about this show, all of these episodes are written by Lisa McGee, who created the show. And above all else, this show felt very, very personal to me. It really seemed to come from a person's life in a way that really worked for me and made it feel less like kind of a boilerplate comedy. It feels very specific, not only to its era, but to the person creating it. And I know we keep kind of coming back to this performance, but Siobhan McSweeney as Sister Michael really gets at, I don't know, it's just one of the most realistic portrayals of what it's like to try to run a school. And it gets at the idea that being a nun is a job. Mm-hmm. And I really dug that.
It's a fantastic performance. But I mean, when you describe the show as warm and heartwarming, I don't see it. I mean, in the last 5 minutes of the last episode of both seasons, yes. But up to that point, it's just people sniping at each other all the time, often in a funny way. What I don't understand is how it goes on from here. There is a 3rd season that they are planning. A emotional shift happens in the closing minutes of season 2 that totally rewrites their relationships, right? Or are they going to go back to the way they were before? Where do you guys see this is going? Because I think they really took a turn in those closing minutes.
I just don't agree with you. I think that when you read these relationships as just people sniping at each other, I don't think it's conscious, but like, I think if they were boys and they were hanging out and giving each other grief like this, and they were just sort of like getting into scrapes and stuff, would it be clearer that underneath all of that, there is a bond and they love each other? Because I think when you look at like the character of Michelle, who's sort of the one who always wants to get in trouble and everything, yes, they get aggravated with her and they're constantly telling her she's going to get everybody in trouble, but they still love her. I mean, they still like, those people are still very close. The fact that they're constantly trying to get each other out of trouble, even though they're also constantly panicking, that is what friendship is partly about at that age.
Okay. I think they rewrote the emotional dynamic of the show in those last minutes in a way that I don't see how it goes on. I'm curious. I do think there was a marked improvement in season two. I think the joke density increased. And I also think the showrunner just kind of got to know this world and these characters and found new places to explore.
All right. We are going to take some questions that listeners sent in. Here's our first one.
Hi, this is Robin from Austin, Texas. My Dairy Girls question is about the music from the show. Like our Dairy Girls, I was in high school in the 90s, so the songs used in the show really hit me in a visceral, nostalgic way. And I'm wondering, are there any musical moments from the show that stood out to you? Thanks.
Yeah, boy, one thing this show did was remind me of how much I love the music of the Cranberries. I appreciated some of the more left field stuff, like the use of Informer by Snow, a kind of novelty hip hop song from the early 90s that pops up very audaciously, but also very effective uses of Enya. Like, they really have access to a lot of great music from that era that sets the mood perfectly. So for me, like, I'm an Enya fan. You can drop Enya into just about anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's a big part of the nostalgia hit, because there are certain other things that mark you as being in the 1990s, like Bill Clinton and whatever. But the music, I think, is a great big part of it. Okay, we're going to go to our second question.
My name's Catherine and I live in Ireland. And I'm really pleased that you're doing this review of Dairy Girls. Really pleased to see it get out into the world. My question for you is how well you think it travels from Ireland, from Northern Ireland, from Derry, given that to me as a local, as someone who's lived in Derry, it seems like a lot of in-jokes, really. So I just wonder how well you think it travels and why you think it travels, if you think it travels well.
So my initial reaction to this is, for me, it has enough jokes that I felt like I got. At the same time, there were things going on that I felt like, oh, there's probably something about this that I am not fully understanding. I think they do a pretty good job of trying to give you enough context clues without interfering with the flow of the show. But I definitely sensed there were things that I was not getting. And I also think there were moments, there's one, for example, when the girls hitch a ride with a woman in a truck, and one of the things that occurred to me was her accent is really different from theirs. And I'm sure that it would have some, in the same way that like when you hear on an American show, a Southern accent versus a New England accent, you're going to get some kind of narrative signaling. I knew that I was missing kind of where is that woman from, which if you knew regional accents in Northern Ireland or in other parts of Ireland, you would probably know where she was from. And it might or might not mean something to you. So I was comfortable with the fact that I wasn't getting everything, but I felt like I got enough.
Yeah, I felt like I was probably picking up, I don't know, 60 to 70% of the jokes that were being flung at me. I mean, I am not from Northern Ireland. I'm not Catholic and I'm not a girl. And naturally, I'm presumably going to get less out of the show than somebody who is from Northern Ireland and or Catholic and or a girl, but I still enjoyed it enormously. And if you fit into any of those groups, you should definitely check it out, because I don't and still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about the show is its sense of place and how skilled it is in conveying that when horror goes on and on and on, it becomes a nuisance. That was something that I kind of related to in the present circumstance.
Yeah.
I just think it's really smart about being of that place and of that time. It felt nostalgic, even if you don't have nostalgia for the place or the time.
Yeah, I think one of the things that they do really well, and it's introduced in, you know, very early in the run of the show, is they sort of explain one of the first things that you see going on in one of the girls' homes is this feeling of like, oh, there's something that sounds very dangerous and frightening happening, but mostly it's just going to keep everyone from being able to get to work. I think that's what Glenn is talking about when he talks about a nuisance. Yep. And I think that's one of the things that it works on two levels, because if you are familiar with it, then it's kind of feels familiar and nostalgic that, oh, yes, that's what that feels like. And that's what that time felt like. Whereas if you're not from there, you get kind of that maybe education of, hey, you know, this is an interesting thought. I would not have occurred to me that that would ever get to that point, but obviously it probably does.
Yeah, and there's a very smart thing the show does by dropping the character of James in on the first on the pilot, because he is the audience surrogate. He is looking around, goggling at everything that's going on, just like we are.
Yeah. All right. And here we go with our final question.
Hi, PCHH. My name is Sophie. I'm calling from Newton, Massachusetts. So my question is, if you were a dairy girl, which would you be? Erin, Michelle, Orla, Claire, or James? I would 100% be Orla.
All right. Thank you, Sophie, a.k.a. Orla. Glenn, why don't you go first?
I am an Erin with Claire rising, I think, because I'm all about thinking myself a writer and explaining things to other people. But also I am a worrier and a grade grubber. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah. How about you, Thompson?
Man, Glenn took my answer. I'm exactly Erin with a Claire rising. Erin fancies herself a creative, which I absolutely did in high school, fancies herself smarter than everybody that she's around in high school, which I also did. Claire judges other people who want to use drugs. Yeah. And that was a big part of my persona in high school. I was a dare kid who thought drugs were for losers. And so I'm absolutely Erin with a Claire rising.
Yeah, I think I might be more Claire with Erin rising. I think maybe some of the Claire qualities, like her being just sort of appalled at what other people are doing all the time, certainly is a way that I sometimes was in high school. She's, I think, the most sheltered and cautious, which I was in high school. She's the one who's always worried that they're going to get in trouble or do the wrong thing or do something that will make people lose all respect for them. And she likes a gesture, I'll just say. She likes a gesture in some ways that felt very familiar to me. But I also will say, I also have a little bit of James in the sense that I also was someone who always felt out of place almost everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I can also feel a little bit of James. And obviously, I'm slightly weird, so that's all Orla. Probably the only thing I have none of is brave and bold Michelle.
Nope. Yeah, exactly. Not a bit. I mean, I think Orla's unself-consciousness does not speak to who I was as a teenager. Michelle's boldness does not speak to me as a teenager, and James's handsomeness does not speak to me as a teenager.
That's one of the really interesting changes, is that in the first season, they're kind of steering into this idea that he's kind of like dorky. And then by the end of the second season, I was like, this is a good-looking young man. All right. Well, let us know what you think about Dairy Girls. In addition to the fact that you wanted us to check it out, I'm really glad we did. I personally liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Before we go, it's time once again to let a couple of our fourth chairs share what's making them happy this week. Take it away, NPR TV critic Eric Deggans.
What's making me happy is Bad Education, a wonderful HBO movie with a star-studded cast featuring Hugh Jackman as this note-perfect school superintendent in Long Island who discovers that the woman who's in charge of doing books, the financial books for the school district, played by Allison Janney, she has been embezzling money from the school district. Now, she convinces the head of the school board, played by Ray Romano, not to prosecute her, but their efforts unravel when an intrepid young reporter from the school newspaper figures out that there's something fishy going on with the school's books. And as the story unravels, as this guy's life unravels, it just gets more tawdry, it gets more and more desperate, it gets more and more weird. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away all the wonderful surprises in this movie, but it's just great to see stars like Hugh Jackman, Allison Janney, Ray Romano starring in this wonderful little gem of a movie that's based on a true story. So check it out.
Hi, this is Aisha Harris, an editor from the New York Times, and what's making me happy this week is season 4 of Better Things. The show stars and was co-created by Pamela Adlon and pulls very loosely from her own life as a working actor and single mother. This season continues to hit so many sweet spots for me, as Adlon's character Sam Fox continues to wrestle awkwardly with aging, both her own as well as that of her kooky mother Phyllis, and her three adolescent daughters, Max, Frankie, and Duke. In particular, there's a fantastically played scene in which Sam and Max have their nastiest fight to date, and it culminates in a way that feels cathartic and affecting. Now, if you haven't caught up with the series yet, I highly recommend starting it from the beginning so you can take in the full arc of the evolving dynamics between Sam and the other characters in her life. It's definitely more of a mood piece than a plot-driven piece, and it'll make you feel good to let it carry you away with a killer soundtrack. You can find Better Things on FX, and every season, including season 4, is streaming on Hulu.
Once again, Eric Deggans recommends Bad Education on HBO. I do too, incidentally. And Aisha Harris recommends Better Things on FX and streaming on Hulu. That brings us to the end of our show. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Thank you for your questions. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. A reminder, please take the podcast survey. It is at npr.org/podcast survey. One word, podcast survey, and that will help us out. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we are going to cover the Hulu series, Normal People.
Hey, it's Ophira Eisenberg. So what happens when the stars from the shows you love, like NBC's Parks and Recreation, Superstore, HBO's Silicon Valley, Insecure, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine face off in trivia games on NPR's Ask Me Another? Find out by tuning in. Listen and subscribe.